Hello, today I'm talking to Uwe Ellinghaus, CMO of Cadillac. Uwe does not want us to see Cadillac as a piece of Americana or say that it is luxury. Rather, he wants us to experience and feel the brand to be engaging and luxurious, whether that is through the in-car concierge service or a show entitled Toilet Paper, which was going on in Cadillac House below while we were having the interview. I will be talking to him about why he moved to New York, why he's not looking for people who are car guys, as he says, and not be following Tesla as a model. On the other hand, we'll hear why he thinks there's a lot to learn from boring industries like banks or insurance companies. We'll talk about Cadillac's A Nation Divided film and how that is a statement without being political. At least that's his wish. Take a look at the Dare Greatly campaign that I will be posting on the website and also at the pictures of Cadillac House. Listen to the interview and then tell us what you think about the brand. We'd love the dialogue. Enjoy.
Please listen carefully.
All right, here we are. This is another episode of the Uber Brands podcast, the podcast where we talk about brands that create meaning beyond the material. And today we are with such a brand. We are at Cadillac, just above Cadillac House. And I'm very happy that Uwe Ellinghaus, the CMO of Cadillac, invited us here. Thanks for having us, Uwe.
It's a pleasure.
And we were just joking. We both have complicated names and it's a punishment by our parents. You're from Germany.
Yes, I am indeed.
And the logic question is, not only you're from Germany, but as every good German, you worked in a German brand, which is BMW.
Correct.
And now you're at Cadillac. Can you give us the inspiration for that move?
Sure. At the first glance, both brands seem to be different with regard to their heritage, their country of origin, and their product lineup. But if you really look closely at them and their customer bases, it's fair to say that they share one thing that's probably part of their success, and this is passion. They are brands from passionate people for passionate people, not necessarily brands that everybody likes, but for those who like a brand with a clear point of view, a clear distinctive profile, they certainly have something to offer. And I was never ever interested in a brand that, in all due respect, is probably good, but otherwise a bit lukewarm. And I realized at BMW that we had fans and we also had people that disliked us. And the same holds true for Cadillac. Not everybody gets it, but those who get it love the brand. So in this regard, I just jumped from one passion brand to the next.
Polarization is good, I guess, for brands that are not necessarily wanting a leading market share. So tell us, what is that point of view of Cadillac then?
I wouldn't necessarily call it polarization. That is maybe one step too far. But what we all learned in our first semester at university is branding is all about differentiation. And I want Cadillac to be a distinctive brand, a distinctive face in the crowd. Because you rightly said, JP, the Germans follow a strategy, and they are our arch rivals, no denying, where they aim for number one in volume the world over. And if you have this strategy, you can no longer afford to take risks. I think Cadillac can afford to take risks, must take risks, and must reach out to people who say, I know how good our German arch rivals are, but I'm not sure I necessarily need a car that the entire neighborhood already has. And this is why I always say, the more successful our competitors will become, the more ubiquitous their products will be, the more people will say, not so sure. And when it comes to our design, I want us to be far more distinctive in both the exterior and the interior design. And we are also not shying away from our performance heritage and territory, something that the German brands needed to give up on to a certain extent because of global aspiration, which means also tackling China, tackling Europe and the US at the same time. And there's no denying that when it comes to the automotive world, Europe is on a different planet than the US and China are. And for example, cars that are expressive, that are sporty, that have horsepower, newton meter and performance to offer, certainly a niche, as the vast majority of even the luxury consumers just want entry-level cars, for example. So I think we have the right product lineup as much as the right brand representation to not be niche, to grow our volumes profitably, but by no means go after the Germans with their 2 million number of new car sales in the foreseeable future.
Okay, that's actually a bit surprising to me, to be honest. So you're saying the core actually of your approach is powerful performance car with an attitude.
Correct.
If I can translate
that. Yeah, that's a very good phrase.
And I guess that they are recognizably Cadillac and American, would that be right?
Yes.
But you also do a lot of communication that goes beyond this product aspect.
Correct.
And actually, I think just as you came in as a CMO and it started before you, there was quite this controversial kind of statement about what American luxury and
Correct.
American success is all about.
Yes, yes.
Can you explain a little bit like the attitude and the philosophy behind mm-hmm. Cadillac and mm-hmm. where you want to go with that?
That's a good question. First and foremost, I do not want to use the word American luxury any longer in the communication.
Okay.
Because if you have to say that you are luxury, you are clearly not. This is the final outtake for the consumer to decide if he or she perceives you to be part of luxury or not. Luxury brands always under-promise and over-deliver, and this is something that I try to achieve as well at Cadillac. This is not just and task for the product, also for the experience and how it feels to be at Cadillac, like at Cadillac House downstairs. And you rightly said that we want to provide a point of view, and we just think that the time is ripe for a distinctive American brand that is luxury, but it is not sending the traditional cues of luxury, because they tend to be formal, they tend to be stuffy, they tend to be opulent, and they tend to be about status. And I honestly believe, and I know that you did a lot of research yourself, the nature of luxury is changing away from these traditional motives to buy luxury, and people perceive luxury as something that is meaningful for them, that has a subjective message that resonates, that has product characteristics that meet their daily requirements, and they do not want to worship or admire a brand. And I want us to communicate on eye level with our consumers, self-confident, American, but without Americana cliches. So no Route 66, no Elvis Presley. We even use sparsely our rich iconic heritage, because we want to reach out to the next generation of luxury car buyers, as we feel they are a much better target group for us than hoping that customers who walked away from Cadillac in the US and are now driving German brands might come back. And my belief that younger customers want to distance themselves with brand choices from their parents, whether it is clothes, whether it is furniture or cars, is undiminished. And interestingly enough, when it comes to the US, my generation, the generation called X, I'm 47 years old, is probably sometimes a bit cynical about Cadillac. But the next age cohort underneath, and they will lead the market in just a couple of years' time, grew up with grandfathers that were already in BMWs, in Mercedes, and in Audis. And this US phenomenon that people say Cadillac is grandfather's car is firstly really a US phenomenon only. No Chinese grew up with a grandfather right. and a Cadillac. And secondly, it is only in certain age brackets where you find this sentiment. And this is why I say, rather than waiting for elapsed customers to come back, let us reach out to the next generation of luxury car buyers, because they want passion, they want emotions, and they want a brand that has clear values and articulates.
And China famously is a market where brands can make a new start. Buick,
for example,
you know, almost dead, made a career there. Yes. Coach established itself as a luxury brand, etc.,
yes.
etc. But let me go back to the US though.
Yes.
It should be a little bit tricky when every day you see President Trump drive around in an Escalade on CNN mm-hmm. to kind of jettison that image of it being the old American definition of luxury. How do you make that new generation experience Cadillac in a very different way, in a dissociated way from that?
Okay. Firstly, I don't think that people necessarily make these associations if they see the president or also other government officials in Escalades. I really think the Escalade is an almost universally liked car. We have the youngest customers, believe it or not, in our most expensive car. And this shows that the Escalade is almost a brand in itself, not necessarily a halo for our sedan lineup, but certainly so iconic that people identify with the Escalade in the first place and not with Cadillac. So if you ask an Escalade buyer, what are you driving? He will tell you he's driving an Escalade. He will not say a Cadillac. This also provides a certain distance that the brand is not perceived as being close to any political party or entity. But people also in America got used to the fact that every luxury hotel has a lineup of beautiful Escalades in front of the house. And therefore, it is almost our S-class, dare I say it, the appropriate, prestigious, comfortable car that politicians, businessmen, and others use for transportation. And therefore, I don't see it as an image risk for the brand Cadillac at all. When it comes to younger customers, one thing is true. They want cars that are distinctive. They want cars that are sporty, nimble, quick, and fun to drive. And an SUV like an Escalade certainly has its limits given its dimensions and the weight. But the XT5, for example, is a perfect bridge between the Escalade and where other customers put their money, namely smaller SUVs, not as big, but still a better looking, better driving car than many non-luxury offers. And it is probably not a surprise that this is currently our best-selling Cadillac. But we also have a group of people who love our performance sedan. And here, the power of V, the V series, is the magic. This is, if you want, our equivalent to M at BMW or RS at Audi. And we know from dealers that the mere fascination for an ATS-V or a CTS-V very often brings in customers. And in some cases, they buy these cars. In other cases, they realize that they are probably a stretch financially, and they end up with an ATS and a CTS without the V, the regular one. And I don't mind. Sales is sales. And therefore, I don't see a need to change the product portfolio to grow profitably, not least because, as you rightly said, China is number two market for Cadillac, and it's only a matter of time before it will be our number one market, just like it is the case for Buick there.
Mm-hmm. And so if we move to China then, and it's a clean slate, Cadillac is able to present itself in whatever form it wants without baggage. How do you want the Chinese to see Cadillac? What's like the two-sentence description when they talk about this brand?
Mm-hmm. They see it just like it is the case in some other countries as a distinctive, clearly profiled, bold and optimistic American choice within the luxury spectrum. And we benefit from the ubiquity of our three German competitors in China. So it's the same motivation that we have here, that people say, I know that cars are good, but I'm not so sure I want a car that the entire neighborhood already has. And the same phenomenon we have in China, and we benefit from it. What is also very reassuring, they want something that is American. America resonates. They aspire to the American way of life to a degree that our dealers, believe it or not, try to find vintage cars that they can put into the dealerships, because particularly younger luxury buyers in China crave for authenticity, and there is no authenticity without your heritage. And they know from Hollywood to the Oscars to you name it, what for a rich heritage Cadillac has, and they see this as just underlining the fact that this brand is a cultural icon. It's an American icon. And as I always say, how many pop songs do you know that feature BMW? This huge appeal that Cadillac always had, also outside of automotive circles, is something that gives the brand a passion that just differentiates it from the Germans, which still tend to limit the brand expression to the product in the first place.
Right. So Cadillac in Hollywood, Cadillac in Motown. You opened Cadillac House downstairs. Mm-hmm. You moved from Detroit to New York. It was much publicized to be where it's hip and where the action is, if you like. How is that working out for you, and how do you now celebrate the icon that is Cadillac in modern ways downstairs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have here the perfect location where we are in West Soho, because the creative class, the creative elite, however you want to call them, they are all working here. Basically, every single building you look at from Cadillac House is an advertising agency, a digital agency, and therefore, exactly for us, the place to be. New York is a very demanding city. But it is this never stand still that we also want in the brand. And it's also an epicenter of luxury, but of a different kind of luxury. In contrast to European cities like, for example, Paris, New York's luxury is far more casual, more laid back, a little more relaxed. I always give you this example. I'm a foodie, as Henry knows, and a winey alike. And very good restaurants in the old world still tend to be a little stuffy and formal. They always have white tablecloths. They sometimes celebrate food with coupons that they then lift. If you try these things in New York, you are dead. People do not want to celebrate food. They want to have a good night out and eat perfect food, right? So you find here bare wooden tables, more bistro-style atmospheres, but people pay a fortune for, and they have two or three Michelin stars. And I think it is this approachable, inviting, casual luxury that all luxury brands across industries need to deliver on, as this is the expectations of all younger customers. And Cadillac House gives you a little the look and feel that we want also our future dealerships to have. And firstly, it's a much warmer tonality. We deliberately put Joe's Coffee in here to lower the threshold to go in, that you just get a coffee.
Right.
And we believe that this is New York. Just opening a Cadillac House and showing beautiful cars will not draw crowds. People in New York look nowhere, right? They have seen it all. And therefore, we say we need to give additional reason to come and be part of the brand world of our prospective buyers. And we know that Generation X and Y, in contrast to the baby boomers, are no longer interested in golf, in motorsports, and other brand territories that our luxury competitors still focus on in their brand operations. But they are interested in fashion, they are interested in architecture, in design, in arts. And this is why, for example, we have our retail lab in here, where the Council of Fashion Designers of America chooses a young and upcoming fashion designer who gets the chance to sell his own collection in Cadillac House. And we also have art exhibitions in here.
Like
and
right now you have Visionaire down there, exactly. You have Andy Warhol.
Exactly, letters to Andy Warhol and others. Why am I doing this? Firstly, I want to reach out to people who are interested in arts or in fashion. But also this guarantees us that we are listed in all serious art guides and in all serious fashion guides as an in location. And then it says in the reporting in all the lifestyle magazines, location at Cadillac House. And this is all part of my attempt to make this brand cool again, which we were for a very long time. And if I look at the events taking place and the reports, the pictures taken, if I look at up to 1,000 visitors a day in a location that's not known for high footfall of pedestrians,
yes,
this is a very good result.
Well, there all these people hang out.
Yes.
It can become an issue because once you get discovered, you become like WeWorks and people sit there all day.
Yes.
But then also a lot of picture taking, a lot of bloggers and so on, which I guess is all in your interest, like you said. Now, combining art with commerce is not new.
No.
Even combining art with cars is not new.
No.
There was a BMW Warhol car.
Yes.
Right? Even
yes.
when he was still alive, he painted it.
Yes, of course.
What makes your choice of artist or your way of going about it authentic? Because you say, and link it to the DNA of this brand.
Mm-hmm. What I simply accept is that the age of control of messages is over, and that it is not for the CMO to determine the kind of art that I surround Cadillac with, and also not the fashion. So having institutions like the Council of Fashion Designers of America or Visionaire behind it, and they have 100% degree of freedom that every curator wants for, guarantees that people that are considered institutions in the art world or the fashion world are the judges. And Uwe Ellinghaus, the CMO, has to accept that the president of Cadillac calls him one morning and says, "Uwe, toilet paper, does that ring a bell?" And it did not, and I didn't even know the publication. And this is fine because it's not necessarily my art, it's not necessarily my fashion. And brands for a long time spent lots of time finding partnerships with other brands or within the art world and always talked about the brand fit, right? And who is appropriate. And I think that people do not really care as much about brand fit. This is almost an internal problem for marketing people to care about. And as we want to celebrate diversity, as being minority is the new majority, as there is no such thing as good taste or bad taste, it's individual taste, I cannot be diverse enough in everything that you see and exhibit at Cadillac House because I want exactly this diversity in our current and future target groups.
So let me try and interpret here and you tell me whether I'm wrong. The actual DNA or part of the DNA here is the recognition that you're not dictating a style of choice. That is part of the DNA. Does that relate to daring greatly, which is that still the direction?
It is, and we need to walk the talk, and it is a mouthful. We always said that, and also that we need to walk the talk in living up to daring greatly. It's not just a slogan. It is really that we go our own way, and I don't know of any other car manufacturer, even if they have similar physical representations of their brand that allow for so much curated content in it to create additional demand and interest. And to have an art exhibition in where certainly many people will say, "Boy, Uwe, that's a bit extreme," is for me totally fine because I need to dare greatly. There are certain limits, of course. We don't want anything down there that is obscene, offensive to certain audiences.
Right.
But so far, none of the approaches required that we had a conversation about, are they adequate partners? And I could rent out Cadillac House as an event space every single night. Everybody wants to come here. And that just shows me we probably hit the zeitgeist of downtown New York.
Let me switch gears a little bit, but it's actually related, and talk about one of your competitor that maybe could also be associated with daring greatly, which would be Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're a fan of electric cars, actually. You've been talking about them almost before Tesla existed. Mm-hmm. There is a company that seems to have an ideology, philosophy, and strategy first, almost.
Yes.
Before they even have a car or a plant or a model. And
absolutely.
And it seems that people follow and put down money before they even can see a model. Is that the highest level of authenticity to you? How do you look at that? And is that something that you find admirable?
Yeah. What I like is brand first, product second. The automotive industry suffers from the disease that it delegated the task to build the brand to the product alone for over a century and said if the cars are just good enough, they will all sell by themselves and build the brand. And no, brand first. That's exactly what we did at Cadillac as well. What is our brand identity? What are our values? How do we want people to perceive the brand? And this determines product characteristics, this determines marketing communications, our messaging, which partners we have, how our dealerships look. And in this regard, Tesla is a good piece of consistency, and that's very true. But we also need to see the dimensions. Tesla sold, if I'm not mistaken, something like 76,000 cars last year in the US, and we sold roughly 170,000. So of course we are much bigger, right? And not to mention 116,000 units in China on top, right? Nevertheless, we take them seriously, like all competitors, but we don't think that the recipe that Tesla has is something that we should emulate. It will be increasingly difficult to build a brand also around electromobility and keep this as a differentiating edge when governments the world over force all automotive manufacturers to lower your emissions and at one point in time have solely electric cars everywhere. In this very moment, it is very difficult to say you need to buy us because we are going a different way. We go against the automotive establishment. We have the guts to just offer an electric drivetrain, whereas the majority of the automotive manufacturers thought and still thinks that the majority of the customers are better off with a plug-in hybrid, for example, until the infrastructure is fully sufficient for sole electric cars or until the battery capacity allows for much wider ranges. So I have a lot of respect that Tesla dared to offer solely cars with an electric drivetrain, but I also know that the differentiating power of doing this will diminish. And as I always say, at one point in time, adding an electric drivetrain to a combustion engine or going for a sole electric version of the same car is more like buying all-wheel drive. Some people want it and tick the box in the price list, and others say, I don't need it. And this is why I do not believe that you can still build around electromobility a clearly differentiated brand, which Tesla did because they had this pioneering advantage.
Right. They attracted a lot of attention. They attracted people. You also made a statement coming here, we said already, to attract customers to Cadillac House, but also to attract employees.
Yes.
And change the mindset.
Yes.
How long have you been here now? A year and a half?
A little more than that, yes.
How's it working out? What has changed?
What has changed is that I have a diversity among my employees that I never had. I hired people from other luxury companies that had no automotive experience. I hired people from other automotive companies, even if they had no luxury experience. I still believe that it can only help us if we don't repeat the mistake that the automotive industry did for such a long time. And this is, they recruited people with an affinity for cars. And if you were a car guy, you were a good guy to work for an automotive manufacturer. And we need car guys. We have hundreds of thousands of car guys at General Motors, including their family members who are often very car enthusiastic. But I also need people who understand that the product has its limits in building a brand. And that it is, for example, the experience, the interaction, all the touch points beyond the product that luxury brands need to deliver upon to be perceived as luxury, as younger customers are less forgiving when, for example, a dealer experience does not live up to the ethos of the brand and simply falls behind the standards of the product alone. And I said this infamous sentence, and we talked about it, I recall our conversation, I want to build a luxury brand that just happens to make cars. And that brought me into big trouble on planet Detroit. But I never say these sentences by accident. I deliberately wanted to send a signal to interested people who might want to work for me that I am not just looking for car guys. Because I just realized that the language of luxury is universal. It transcends. It is about the fact that a luxury brand is a dream, and that the product is just the means to achieve it.
In fact, I read that you hired the guy who developed your favorite airline booking
CRM system. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
So tell us about CRM and Cadillac. What is special when I interact with Cadillac? Is that on the phone?
Well, firstly, General Motors is very, very good in customer relationship management, to be fair. The OnStar interactions that you can have a concierge in all our cars, this is really working well. So it's interesting that a non-luxury company overall is head and shoulders to where our luxury competitors are, our Germans in CRM, because the Germans relied on their products for so long. Whereas General Motors rightly realized product alone is not enough, right? It's pretty amazing that we have, I think, 15 million cars with Wi-Fi now on the road, and there are still German luxury cars out that do not offer Wi-Fi on board. And therefore, this idea to allow people to utilize the drive time, but also to create interactions like with our OnStar system that generate opportunities to interact with the customer post the purchase is something where General Motors is very, very good. And I just realized from my own experiences with CRM in automotive and in other industries that in general, the customer interaction, whether it's online, social, via telephone, or in any other shape or form, tends to be better in unsexy industries than in industries that have very, very sexy, shiny objects as products, like just like automotive. So I just realized that, for example, banks, credit card companies, even insurance companies, are with regard to their online presence, in many cases still above many, many automotive manufacturers. Therefore, I always said when it comes to CRM, it's probably better to look for people from such unsexy industries rather than recruiting automotive CRMs. We can learn. And so far I can only say it has worked. But I also know that customer relationship management is an eternal construction site,
right,
given the demanding clientele that we have. And before customers say they are fully satisfied, we really, really need to over-deliver.
And beyond the technical conversation, you also seem to want to have a social conversation almost. At least that's how I would interpret kind of the advertisement that you put in the Oscars, and that was heavily discussed.
Yes.
It seems on trend because you were not alone. Budweiser, Audi, Shinola, everyone seems to comment. In your case, around a nation divided and how that's not very American, because actually it should be a nation united. What's the driver for that? And at the same time, you also seem to make statements that it's not meant to be a political statement. So why even go into it?
Yeah, for a very long time, I have always followed the advice I was given early in my career. Never send a political message. Why offend 50% of the country,
yeah,
right? This situation here is a little bit different. Firstly, it wasn't a reaction to what other advertisers are doing around Super Bowl or the Oscars. This discussion started far before the election. So I never had any desire to enter a political debate. But it didn't take the result of an election to find out how divided and polarized this country is. And I do believe that America is only powerful and strong if it finds a way out of this divide and starts to be one united nation again. And I always wanted to send a signal that transcends the current political divide, that doesn't party with either political side, but makes it very, very clear that we are an iconic American brand. We are part of the history of this country. We are a brand that chauffeurs the president, as you also said. We are probably more credible than non-American brands or other American brands with a heritage that doesn't include having chauffeured 17 presidents in our history, to simply send an appeal to unity. And this is what I wanted to achieve. And if I look at the results, 170 million video views for all the four pieces that we aired during the Oscar night, many, many millions for the piece that you mentioned. It certainly did the job in terms of intriguing people. And when I look at the comments that were made from both political sides, and both, let's say, protagonists say, oh, that's the best pro-Trump or the best anti-Trump piece ever made, probably our agency got it right, because this wasn't about Trump at all. It was neither pro nor con, and isn't. It is just a message that this country has been divided in its past, and it found together and it emerged stronger than it ever was. And I sincerely hope that this will happen again.
And you, as an American brand, have a vested interest in making the country successful or
healing
the country.
We all want America to be powerful and successful. I think we all share this. And of course, we got most criticism for not entering a political debate, for sending an appeal to unity rather than fueling the fire, from those who simply want to fuel the fire from both sides.
Right.
That's criticism that I accept.
Is there a platform where Cadillac likes to converse, where it likes to interact? In other words, if our listeners are interested in Cadillac and want to have a conversation, where should they go? Physically or on the internet?
Well, of course, the quickest to get an overview on all things Cadillac is online, right? I start with Cadillac.com and daregreatly.com, our own homepages. But I also say go to all the search engines the world over and enter Cadillac, and you'll be surprised how many comments you find on all the things we are airing or others put onto these portals and search machines. There is definitely a amount of online conversation, social conversation, press reports about Cadillac out that exceeded at least my expectations by far. We are again a brand that's talked about, and that's a good thing.
Excellent. Uwe, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you
for having us here.
It was a pleasure.
And dear listener, you can always reach us at info@uberbrands.com, and that's spelled with a U-E as it should be. If you like this podcast, then please let us know, let your friends know, rate it, review it. That's what keeps us going. You can always subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and you can read and follow our blog at uberbrands.com. That's it for now, and tschüss. Till next time.